Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. I'm Mateen filling in for Kasim today. And our guest today is Jeff Wilson. So Jeff, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Sure. My name is Jeff Wilson. I'm currently the CEO of a company I created and founded, Extreme Engineering. Been doing that for, I guess, 28 years this year. My background is engineering, mechanical engineering, and several other engineering approaches, including biomedical, polymer chemistry, and aeronautical, where I started with Hughes Aircraft. So hope that kind of does it.
Awesome. So how did you get the idea to start this company?
Well, it's interesting. I was running the research and development sector for a thing called mass storage devices for Hewlett Packard back, early 90s. And it started working so well that I find myself kind of bored, actually. And as I was introducing new ideas, I found it easier to introduce new concepts, ideas, and inventions on my own, and was kind of started a separate company in parallel to working with Hewlett Packard, and did great at Hewlett Packard. It was a wonderful company, by the way. I have nothing but praise for that company back then. It was just a brilliant company. Unfortunately, it took a bad turn in the late 90s. And I don't think it ever recuperated ever since. Just bad management. For 60 years, it flourished. It started in Silicon Valley. Just like I said, nothing but praise for it. So I started building things on my own and had patents and got revenues from those patents. That's how I put my oldest two kids through college. And then my 15-year-old son really got into rock climbing. So we were in the Sierras, so we'd go rock climbing, bouldering, and eventually it just got difficult to get out there to the rock. So I made a faux rock climbing wall out of Bondo and gave him old Bondo pieces. And then we put it on a trailer so we could take it to events at our church and other things. And eventually it just got more sophisticated. Wound up going to a trade show in 96. Yeah, it was August of 96. Started the company in 95, kind of loosely. 96, went to a trade show with the first prototype and got kicked out of the trade show. The promoter of the trade show, this Frenchman, was so scared of the idea of it being live on the floor that he tore up my contract in front of me and had these goons, basically union goons, wheel me out to the parking lot outside the trade show center in Salt Lake, Utah. What's the name of that trade show right downtown by the, anyway, into the parking lot, negotiated with the parking lot owner, and for 3 days stood out there trying to sell my wares. Mind you, I was a mid-level management at research and development for a Fortune 100 company, so I didn't really need it, but did it anyway, and sold my first three climbing walls out in that parking lot. So that's how it started.
Awesome. So what makes you better than your competition?
Well, I think competition is a pretty broad term, right? Surely, certainly have stuck it out longer than anybody else. We've had at one point over 12 formidable companies, including Entreprix and a couple other real companies that were well-established and well-funded, trespassing my patents and showing up to the trade shows. And I realized at that moment, you're on your own. If you want to defend it, don't think that some patent's going to do it. You really have to get sharper than that. And don't spend your money necessarily on patent attorneys in defense. Spend your money on just getting smarter and marketing better. So I think that lesson is one I walked away with. Just be better and sharper at initiating an idea and then getting it out there.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if you watch Shark Tank, but Mark Cuban always said the patents and the NDAs are all overrated. If your idea is good, it's going to work. If it's not, it's not going to.
No, that is a truism. There's nothing like drive. I would just say that all the other companies went in thinking that very monomind. They went in looking to compete with this thing as a rock climbing thing. We're a rock climbing company. I built rock climbing. I never really went in with that. That was never my passion. In fact, it's still not a passion. My passion was new ideas, concepts, and monetizing things. Growing up very humble in a farm family in the West Coast in Watsonville, California, you know, money was king to be able to buy things and eat, pay bills. So that always stuck with me. It isn't the whole sole driver, but it's certainly not forgotten about.
Definitely. So what is the role of technology in your business?
Well, that's a great question. It's always been the driver for me as a professional. You look back, I started my professional career working for Hughes Aircraft, and we were building F-16 and B-1 bomber componentry for the radars at that point. And so there was a lot of things about how do you get this thing, it's very delicate electronic instruments, to survive wartime, you know, our military specs, right? And so it's the technology that makes that happen. And sometimes something as bizarre and weird as getting the coolant around a certain area, in this case, they were traveling wave tubes or for radar. How do you get the coolant around there to cool it enough so that it could survive a combat mission, right? Or simulated combat mission. And so what I discovered early that most of the technology that made the difference was kind of these sleepers, these small creeping forward, but yet important things, right? How do you get something to stay cool? Usually basic physics, usually something as basic as the first law of thermodynamics. And so it didn't have to be this major breakthrough theoretical physics on quantum mechanics. Usually something pretty basic, a bent metal tab with a screw on it sometimes. I have patents for those kind of stupid things. I have patents on phase lock loop for control systems that I've done that, you know, which is really weird imaginary plane math, which I never quite thought I'd ever get into, but I did. You know, the patents on it. So in the end, how does technology play? Technology is a tool. That's all it is. It's a ways to a means. You know, I don't really create a technology and then try to find a place to sell it. It's actually the other way around. Find something that we need to sell, then, okay, how do you come up with a technology to do that? So exactly. I don't know if that answers the question, but
No, it does. So I'm curious, like, you know, I feel like you're very forward thinking when it comes to technology. So are you looking at or seeing use cases right now for artificial intelligence in your business?
We are, actually. I think AI plays a role more for day to day. For example, we were looking to create a document for a patent on something we were applying for. We just simply ran out of time because everybody's running just like crazy guys trying to. In fact, on Thursday, we're going to have our big breakthrough. And actually, in your town, in Southlake, you should go try to get your eyes on it. It's pretty cool. Anyway, we're going to have the breakthrough on Thursday. And I'm here in Brazil, so I didn't get to be there. But they're going to do a live cast, so I get to see it. But you know, it's interesting that it comes back to how do you implement a technology? And so early lessons, and sorry if I digress, but I think it's important. Hewlett-Packard was failing in 1939. And, you know, it was the end of just a horrible time in the United States, worldwide, actually, where the economy had crashed, Great Depression. And they both wanted had a great job working for Westinghouse. And they said, hey, why don't you come out here to newly found California, basically from a technology perspective. They both had graduated from Stanford. And they said, why don't you come out here? We're going to start our new company, Hewlett and Packard. Dave Packard and Bill Hewlett. And their first company was working for Disney. That's odd because that's who we work for often. But their first business was taking Fantasia, making the audio and video synchronize. And they came up with a thing called the 100A audio oscillator. And so what they did, they built it in a garage in the back of their house in Palo Alto. And eventually that became the hell of it. I've been in Brazil too long. I've almost started speaking Portuguese to you. Hail Mente. It really became the beginning of the Silicon Valley. And so I think the lesson for me was, how do you take some technology and make something practical out of it? How do you apply it? Applied technology might be the way. And I know my friends in theoretical physics and other things, they frown on me. because I'm more about making it real and practical. They're more about the theory of things. Almost went down that path, but it's too esoteric for me.
Makes sense. So in terms of the products that you're making and selling, is everything B2B, or can somebody go on your website and buy direct for their home?
Yeah, you know, we did the home thing once. In fact, we even had stuff floating out of Costco, but we failed because we were not set up to deal with that kind of volume and low margin. So we've kind of looked at it from a perspective of high margin, low volume, and that's what we're good at. So high quality, you know, difficult things to do that you have to be set up to do. And we found ourselves really shining in that arena. So yeah, most of it's B2B, or we even try to get people to start their own businesses, like the mobile climbing wall business. We put many, many people in business, fulfilled their dreams, bought houses, put kids through school.
So in terms of that, right, so do you do custom orders as well? Like, I don't know if you ever have maybe some celebrities say, listen, like, I want you to build this crazy rock climbing wall at my house.
Yeah, we did. Actually, you remember the show called, what was it? Extreme Home Makeover.
Yeah.
It was one of the first kind of makeover home shows. And we were on that regularly, putting rock walls in these custom homes. And it was okay. It just took so much attention to do it well. We even put a crane, a mobile home, or a climbing wall over a house. I think it was in San Mateo, California, over the guy's house, put it in his backyard so they could have a climbing wall for his kids. And he was the guy who invented bagel bites for Costco and made stupid money doing that. So yeah, we've done the occasional of those, but mostly our stuff has been B2B, and that seems to have been the better way.
Right. So you said like you're focused on certain margins based on volumes. As of right now, what is your average profit margin?
We try to do 70% when we can, but those are rare. They're usually in our repair parts and service. We're in the 70%. Brand new product we're just launching right now called the Flex Shade. That's in that kind of margin. That will probably be the first real volume consumer product that we do. And it might eat us alive, but we'll address that later. But yeah, normal work, 40% is a good number to shoot for. That keeps our EBITDA running right around 12 to 15%.
For sure. So in terms of keeping your margins, you know, that high, or, you know, or making them higher, what is, you know, something like that you're looking at in terms of even like technologically that could help you, you know, keep your margins higher or make them even higher than they are today?
Yeah, great question. So everything kind of gets pushed through that filter, right? We don't do something because we can. We do it because it makes business sense. Although I'd like to make more things, like, you know, I've got a whole garage full of that stuff. But yeah, you got to look at the whole picture. What are the tool sets you use currently? Are there better tool sets? And are we set up to use it? So in the end of the day, if you have a better tool set, are we really the company to do that, or should it be subbed? You know, make or buy kind of question. We're very vertically integrated today because of that thinking. We have become experts at fabrication. And a spinoff that hit us during COVID was that we started taking what I call in taking in laundry. We started doing other people's work. And usually when that is, you're taking in the dirty laundry that nobody wants to clean. So we started building things that were very, very difficult to do. Certified welding components, tool sets that we weren't really particularly super familiar with. And during that time, took a major, major risk off the cliff and bought a laser company that had gone out of business and hired the guy for a year to teach us. And so we quantum leap learned how to run CNC equipment at a new level during that time, allowing us to now about 60% of our business is high margin building for other people, like Mattel's new amusement parks. We're the guys building all the steel structure, 3 million pounds of it right now.
Wow. So in terms of, you know, customer service, if somebody's reaching out to you, are they typically calling you, or like, what does that look like? Or do you use AI to have like responses? I mean, what is, you know, in terms of your business?
Yeah, it'd be nice to use AI, but back to the AI thing, I didn't finish that, but we used that to do our first pass patent. Didn't have to clean it up much. I was very impressed. Yeah, right now it's old school. We have somebody who has a great relationship with our customer base, and she cranks out about 20% of our margin every year with only doing 20 to 30% of our margin, I hate to say, with only about 15% of the gross. And it's done manually and supplied manually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's like what I've seen. It's like, I don't know, like, you know, just what you think, you know, being in business like for so long, that it's just making the lives of customer service agents so much easier. Maybe not taking away their jobs, but making their lives easier with AI.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's certainly that first pass, or you can go even to the extent that eBay has gone, where it's almost impossible if you have anything out of the ordinary, which isn't that extraordinary, you can't solve it. You're stuck. You're SOL. But they're playing really heavily on the 80-20 rule, focusing on the 80% of the people, not worrying about the 20% that have an issue that needs resolved. So to me, I think the future is eBay is going to fail because of that kind of stuff, because they're missing the people. It may not happen within the next 10 years, but if they continue to do that, lack of ability to communicate and close issues that are outstanding, I don't see how they'll survive. And they're not really using AI. They're using canned routines and stuff. So that's, to me, the bottom of the rung right now. And I'm very disappointed because I like those guys. And I thought and think they're brilliant. And what they do is brilliant. But right now, they're in a state where, I don't know, they've become, to me, Sears and Roebuck catalog. It's sad because I think there's a much better way to do it. I think AI certainly plays a role in those areas, without a question. I'm far from an expert there and really talking out of my realm entirely. But my experience so far has been very favorable. One of the reasons you can tell a technology has a future is by the resistance of which it's accepted. Huge resistance usually means it's going to impact people in a big way. So if you look at the legal community, how angry they are about AI, there's briefs produced every day on AI that are probably pretty damn good, right? I have read a few that I'm going, wow, this is pretty good. Same with patents and other things. So AI has a future. For me, I'm kind of using it as a toy. So I'm not really an expert to speak to that.
Makes sense. So what is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you became an entrepreneur?
Don't do it. I think a couple things is always think about how do you become underfunding is always the issue of any entrepreneur. Businesses going in underfunded is almost an inevitable death, and it's a cyclic death. You know, we've been in business long enough that I've probably made most of the major mistakes you can make. So I don't know, I would say realize that breakdown isn't the end. Breakdown creates breakthrough. What I mean by that is when you fail, that's when you realize that didn't work, so you got to try something new. So breakdown creates breakthrough. There's also another day. There's always a fresh day to do it again. What I really wish I would have known, man, I don't know. I'll tell you, it was an easier path to be a corporate guru. I just don't think I appreciated what I had. That'd be the honest truth. I thought it'd be easier. I didn't realize how many people would thief everything from me and get away with it. I thought there was some rule of law or reasonable thing in human culture that piranhas wouldn't eat you alive, but they did many times, actually. However, I will say karma really exists. However you want to put it, what goes around comes around. But I'll tell you, it exists. It really does. I've seen this so many times that it's made me be even more integritous and more honest than I possibly ever. I just forced that direction. Just a safe place to go. So what I wish I knew, boy, I think there's one rule I made. I don't take partners. I try to fund everything myself, so I'm not beholden to loans. It'd be really good if I could figure out how there wouldn't be a customer involved, but that's dumb. I mean, the only way you do that is if you're in the stock market, right? Because you don't really work with customers. You just sell it to the open stock market. So yeah, I think don't take partners. It's just not worth it. I know people have done many successful partnerships, but I've never been successful at that for whatever reason. It's just never worked for me. So I wish I would have known that earlier.
That makes sense. So if somebody wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing the best way to get in contact with you? I mean, just somebody who watched this interview or your company website.
Yeah, I'm trying to remain kind of quiet these days. If you want to go info@extremeengineering.com, feel free to answer. And we have got good people to answer questions, probably better than me, actually.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, I want to say thank you so much for your time. You know, hopefully your company keeps growing and, you know, very insightful advice. I mean, obviously, listen, like, we're in a business partnership. Matina's one of my partners, but I think it's definitely like very valuable, right? Because like different things work for different people. And I think
right. It
shows, you know, you need to have, if you're going to partner, you need to have the right people. And that's so critical.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do that, there has to be skin in the game for everybody. I find that the partnerships I've had, I've done my over unfair share of work and not got it reciprocated. So finding the right partnership. Now, on the other hand, I've been married for 47 years, and that's a great partnership, and it continues. So I know partnerships can work.
That's true. Awesome. Well, Jeff, thank you again. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your time in Brazil.
Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye.
Thanks. All right. Bye.